There are a lot of great writers in this town, and there have been a lot of great writers in this town. And near the top of that list now is Kathleen Rooney. Her latest book, and I've been a fan of all of her books, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, is called From Dust to Stardust, and it is certainly Chicago-centric. It was spurred by a visit she made as a little girl, probably 7 or 8 years old, to the Museum of Science and Industry. She's somewhat older now, but welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
It is. I know. But you're so prolific. We do this like once a year.
Yeah, I get to talk to you often.
What was that visit? What was that visit as a little girl?
Yeah, it was back when I was 8, and my family had recently moved to the Chicago area from Louisiana, and one of the things they did was take us to the Museum of Science and Industry, and as I think everybody who's been there knows, it's amazing. It's full of stuff that could captivate you all day, but the thing that grabbed me was Colleen Moore's Fairy Castle, which is like a museum within the museum. It's one ton, that's got emeralds and mother of pearl, and this narration that seems to believe, but it's actually populated by fairies, and so I was just hooked.
I'm sure, I mean, even I, who didn't play with dolls and didn't play with dollhouses as a kid, I remember it well. My father wrote the history of the Museum of Science and Industry,
Yeah. So
I was there a lot, but that castle grabbed you. In a way, you didn't, I suppose every time you would go back to the Museum of Science and Industry, you would go and take a look at it. But
Yes. Explain
to me how it sits in your brain to the point where all of a sudden, as a already talented writer, you say, I need to write about this.
Yes, I love that question because I'm always the person at the reading asking, like, where did you get your idea? And
right.
So my idea came from not just the castle, but the sort of, I guess, you know, wall text, the placards, the explanatory material that the museum had at the time, which said not just what the castle was, but who made it. And it said it was made by this silent movie star, Colleen Moore. And I think the two things about her that just absolutely stayed with me were that she had one brown eye and one blue eye, and so she had to do a screen test here in Chicago at SNA in Uptown to make sure she looked okay. And I thought that was so just capricious of fate that it hinged on that. And then the second thing is that she toured the castle during the Great Depression.
Oh, I know.
So she didn't just build it for herself, but she raised money. And so I just was like in love with Colleen Moore.
Well, let me ask you, in exploring Colleen Moore, you obviously, I have to assume, had never heard of her until seeing her castle and reading that little plaque about her. This is one of the people who, because she wasn't in the talkies, she was a huge movie star. When did you really start to research her life and times?
Yeah, I would say it was late in 2016, and I was kind of thinking of what I wanted to do for my new project. And that is when I kind of went back to that memory and started asking my adult self, okay, why was she famous? I mean, I know she was a silent star, but what does that mean?
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
I started watching as many of her films as I could, and I think the thing, you know, part of what made me feel like I had to write the book and I really wanted to is that so much of her oeuvre is lost. So many silent movies, you know, it's nothing personal, but so many of those are just gone. And the ones of hers that I could watch, I just thought, I mean, I love silent movies and I love the past, but she had this real modernity about her. And I just felt like watching her, I could hang out with her today. She could walk off the screen into the 21st century and fit in.
Question about that. No question about
yeah.
her. She did. She also spent a great deal of time in Chicago. You have written, Kathleen Rooney, some nonfiction work. Did you at any point think to yourself, wow, I should just write a... There have been some books written about her, but some not very good and some quite old. Did you ever think to yourself, wow, this would be a great subject for a nonfiction biography?
Yeah, it did cross my mind, but then in the same way that, you know, Lillian Boxfish and Cher Ami and Major Whittlesey kind of became novels, I thought, you know, there is this record, and if people do want to go back, there are a lot of great sources, you know, old though they may be. And I was, you know, I always ask the question of, if I write a project, am I adding something to it? What am I going to give people that they can't just get on their own from Wikipedia? And I think for me, it was sort of the magic of her. And if I had to boil her down to one phrase, it would be joie de vivre. And she just seemed like such a joyful person, even though, you know, she bad things happened to her. She had a terrible marriage. And, you know, I mean, the movie industry is rough, but she just was so joyful. And so I wanted to kind of think about where that came from and like the magic of the fairies and the kind of person who would, you know, do this. So I think I wanted to have that freedom to really make her, you know, not that she needs embellishment, but as Doreen O'Dare in my book, to really just make her pop.
Well, but also it enables you to use your creativity in a way that goes way beyond citing old newspaper stories. You get to, in a sense, inhabit a character sort of not – you help fully form the character in the book. I will read one line before we take a little break. She is having a conversation here with the famous director D.W. Griffith, who could not be in a room alone with any young star. And he tells her, you know, girls got to realize that a career on the screen demands everything but promises nothing. Yes, sir, said Doreen. What makes you think you're pretty enough to work for me? He said. I don't, I said, because I don't think pretty is the point. I think people want to see real human beings on screen. I believe that I can be a real human being. I don't know if Colleen Moore ever said that, but that's just a lovely, lovely thought, Kathleen Rooney.
Thank you. Yeah, I made that up. Thank you.
Of course. Well, it's a novel. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about some of the fascinating... There's some newspaper people in this book, too, and it's just... And I want to talk, too, so think about this, and I'm sure you've talked about it before. It's a fascinating narrative structure. It moves between 1968 and an interview that's taking place at the Museum of Science and Industry, and goes back throughout her entire life, not the whole thing, but back to the glory days of Hollywood. We will be right back with Kathleen Rooney. The book is, and you should buy it, From Dust to Stardust. It's a magnificent novel. We'll be right back. One of the great, great characters in contemporary fiction is a young girl and woman named Doreen O'Dare, created by Kathleen Rooney of Chicago and based on the life and times of silent film star Colleen Moore, who was something. My mother knew Colleen Moore Hargrave later on, which I think, you know, and my mother knew Adela Rogers St. John, and there's a lot of, yeah, no kidding, there's a lot of wonderful, for me, certainly, overlap. And though her dollhouse, the house at the Museum of Science and Industry, is not my favorite thing at the Museum of Science and Industry, it will always be the coal mine because it scared me half to death. But I certainly admired this woman. I admire her tremendously as a fictional character. She is gutsy. She was sent here every summer by her parents. And she spent time with one of the great things, Kathleen, is in writing about Hollywood and Chicago in those times, you come across a lot of other characters who you can breathe life into, yes?
Yes. And the one who you're building up to, who I think, you know, I can understand why he might be near and dear to your heart is, you know, Walter Howie, who's a great Chicago newspaper man. And he, you know, Ben Hecht, another great Chicago writer, wrote the front page about him, and he was Colleen Moore's real uncle by marriage, and so I knew I had to put him in there, and he's sort of like a kind of like almost fairy godfather to Doreen, and it was a lot of fun to do.
I love the way you describe him, too, and I hope you don't mind me reading a little something, because I think it'll give people a sense of your magnificent style. Aunt Lib, who was married to Uncle Walter, liked to call me the child of my soul. Uncle Walter called me the child of my imagination. A hard-bitten newspaper man, he had a glass eye, and he'd never tell anyone how he got it. I'm not sure even Aunt Lib knew the truth. Legend attributed the orb to the circulation wars of his early days in the Windy City, a time when gangs employed by rival newspapers waged battles in the streets, or, less romantically, to Walter's passing out drunk and impaling himself on a copy spike. Walter became famous for, as you have it in here, for one of the great scoops of all time, interviewing people who had survived and escaped from the Iroquois Theater. He also your character, Doreen O'Dair, sort of loved Uncle Walter more than she loved her own dad. Her dad was not the most supportive person to her dreams of Hollywood, was he?
No, and I, you know, that's where fiction is great, mm-hmm. because by all accounts, the real life Colleen had lovely parents, but for the purposes of my story, I wanted to make it more complicated. And so I, you know, as a writer, I'm fascinated by those adult relationships that kids can have at pivotal times with people who are not their mom and dad. And so I love this idea of, you know, Walter trading in a favor to get his favorite niece her big break, because even though it's 1916, Hollywood is already super hard to crack into, and so she needed it.
Well, he says somewhere in here, and I'm just doing this from memory, that Hollywood is harder to crack than a Brazilian nut. And she eventually, at one point, she writes, you write in here, let's stop for a second and go back to the remarkable and creative narrative structure of this novel. It is set not only in the 1968 when a woman is interviewing O'Dair in the Museum of Science and Industry about her memories and the castle. And how did that come to you? And do you need sort of a plot before sitting down to write this, or did that just come to you, Kathleen?
Yeah, great question. I always say that to me, because I write all genres, but novels are the most architectural. And by that I mean, personally, I have a really hard time writing without a blueprint. I need a structure. I need a container to pour the content into and to put the characters in to move around. And so in this case, I knew right away, once I knew I was going to write about it, that I had to use the device of the fairy castle, because, I mean, what better way to tell her story than to go room by room? So you really do get this tour where you know, you see the garden and you see the little coach and you go into the library and the small hall.
And the bedroom,
I love that idea.
The bedroom of the prince, the bathroom of the prince. It is separated by that. And the device of having this woman named Gladys interviewing her in 1968. Why'd you pick 68?
Yeah, I wanted her to be well past her fame, so she would have that retrospective look. I don't want anyone to get the idea that she's just, you know, sitting on her laurels. She's become a financial advisor, so she's having this other life. She's way, way past the silent days. But I also wanted that. You know, to me, there's three reasons. In 2016, I was thinking about, you know, when, you know, things feel dark and nations are divided, what brings us together? Same question in the Great Depression that, you know, Doreen and Colleen were trying to answer with the castle. And then, of course, 68, that was a very, very difficult year, you know, in American history with, you know, assassinations and the Democratic National
Chicago
Convention,
history.
Specifically for Chicago.
Yeah.
And so just this idea of what we do, you know, in, you know, how history kind of, you know, repeats itself or at least rhymes, and what we're trying to do to, you know, keep ourselves reminded of beauty and solidarity. And so I knew 68 was a good time to talk about the castle.
Yeah, and one of your most artful methods is the way in which you can draw things that you never knew about, that you didn't know Rudolph Valentino. I will give you that, Kathleen Rooney. But I'm just going to read. You give her memories such articulate depth. Here's another part of the book. Today, more than 40 years ago, after his untimely death, few people seem to understand the animal magnetism of Valentino. as elegant as Dracula. God, what a great line that is. Rudy had that little ooze of cruelty about his hooded eyes, a dashing man with lengthy lashes and agile shoulders. A rumor of his having been a gigolo proved untrue, but he was a darn good dancer, not to mention a gymnast and a horseman, and he collected rare books. American men resented him as a foreign Lothario, a pretty boy born for passionate lovemaking. Some petty writer from my uncle's newspaper in Chicago, which was the Tribune, used the term pink powder puffs to slur men who imitated his dress and manner. But that was pure jealousy of his gallantry and grace. Women across the nation fainted at his flickering image. I have rarely, if ever, come across a better description of Rudolph Valentino. I didn't know him either.
Thank you. Does
a paragraph like that, not to get too much into the weeds of writing,
yeah,
does a paragraph like that just come to you, or do you have to rework something like that? You know you want to write about Valentino. You know you want to say something about him. Does that come easy?
Yeah, it comes from sort of asking a question. You know, I think that's one of the reasons I like writing in general, but especially history, is like, okay, like you said, I'm not someone who ever knew him. I'm not someone who ever watched him when he was a phenomenon, but like, what was it like to be moved by Valentino? And then, yeah, and it, you know, it takes some drafting, but I love to just try to answer those ultimately impossible and yet kind of answerable questions.
Yeah, because you provide the answer, and it is
exactly.
A valid, and in this case, poetic answer. We're going to keep talking after the news, if that's okay with you. If you can stay on,
yes.
Because I want to. There's another great paragraph in here when she talks about stardom, and we'll tell you a little bit more about Colleen Moore Hargrave and her final third marriage, which seemed to be a very happy one, was it not?
Yes, extremely. Fairy tale ending.
Yes, exactly. How perfect. So please stay tuned through the news and whatever update of the Bears score you may get. And I'll be back with Kathleen Rooney to talk about From Dust to Stardust, her latest novel. Please go, when you have time, to Kathleen Rooney. I'm not going to insult you by spelling that for you, .com, because you can find all the things she does. One day you got to come in here for 2 hours and talk about Rose Metal Press. I've always been intrigued by Poems While You Wait. You can get information about that. But now I'm just interested in devouring your novels and your other works. And she also teaches, for goodness sake. The latest is From Dust to Stardust, inspired by Colleen Moore's incredible dollhouse at the Museum of Science and Industry. And it is enabled, Kathleen, by creating a character named Doreen O'Dare to write about how this woman, and Colleen Moore herself is a remarkable woman, as I recall her sitting and having drinks with my mother at our house. But here, you know, the thing about it, Kathleen, you really have some incredible observations here. You're writing about her, and you say, movie, and this is in her voice, movies of those early days appealed to my imagination because they required the spirit of the viewer to supply so many elements, the voices of the actors foremost among them. The silence of the stars rendered them intimate yet godlike, a peculiar art form, and it was cheap. You could hand over a dime and purchase a dream. That's just, to my mind, magnificent. Magnificent writing.
Thank you.
She invested her money wisely. She stopped making movies when she was still very, very young. That's probably why people don't remember her, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She made, I do think it's interesting, you know, and one of the reasons that I wanted to write about her, she made 4 talking pictures, so she could have done that transition. She passed her sound test, she could memorize lines, she had a beautiful speaking voice, you know, she was smart, she was articulate.
Yeah.
But as she told it, you know, and I found this interesting and wanted to put it in my character, she it wasn't as much fun anymore. Like, you know, it wasn't as bad as Singing in the Rain where they're talking into a plant with like a microphone, but it was, you know, you watch the silent movies of that era and they're so zippy. They move and they're so quick and so light and the tempo is so charming. And then it was, you know, the step back. And then also I write about this. She, you know, like many actresses, found herself kind of being pushed back upon by the producers and the directors who kind of felt like women had gotten too much power and attention and used the upheaval as an opportunity to, you know, push them back. And so, you know, she deliberately left. And I love people who have second acts, and I love people who, you know, when they have to make a change, don't become bogged down, but sort of say, like, all right, what can I do next?
Yeah, and she's a great example of that. I mean, I'm not even going to bring up the word feminism, but she is an incredibly independent thinker and independent doer also. You know, she writes here, you write here, and she speaks, stardom, I have been warned by many, could become terrible in its loneliness. I did all I could to combat that feeling, attending parties and events, always being cordial and gracious, but also exercising caution about making new friends, because you could always tell when someone who hadn't the time of day for you when you were obscure was only taking you up because you were acclaimed. No, thank you. That obviously is one of the reasons she abandoned that world. But she met a remarkable guy in Chicago, and who she says, you say for her, he was not just a gentleman, but a gentleman. Who was that?
Yeah, so, you know, in the book I changed names, but in real life it was Homer Hargrave. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and so he's this, you know, vice president of Merrill Lynch, and he, you know, knows all about the stock market. And I thought it was very interesting that, you know, in real life and therefore in the novel, Colleen, because she went to Hollywood so young, only had an eighth grade education.
Right.
And she was sort of self-conscious about that, but she was so smart. She read books. She, you know, educated herself in other ways. And so when she fell in love with this guy, you know, she sort of joked about how she kind of approached him and said, you know, help me invest my, you know, silent movie fortune. I can't even balance my checkbook. Ha ha. And he was like, okay, come on. Like, no. And so he kind of encouraged her to figure it out. And then she went on to write this great book, and I want to recommend it.
Sure.
Because it's so charming and it holds up and the concept holds up, which is called How Women Can Make Money in the Stock Market. And it came out in 1968, and her whole thing was, you know, you don't have to have a fortune and you don't have to have a man. You can, you know, take whatever you've got and make it work for you. And I think that was absolutely tied to that independence and that, you know, desire for other women to kind of have more freedom, too.
Yeah. You must have met, because I've met them. You must have met Hargraves before and after writing the book. I have to assume that they are delighted by your portraits in the book.
Yes, and shout out if they're listening. Alice Hargrave has been super, super supportive and really great to get to know. I didn't know them prior to writing the book, and I didn't come into contact with them as research because, you know, again, it's fiction, and I don't, I don't want to overdo it. But afterwards, I do like to reach out when I can find relatives and say, "Hey, I wrote a book about, you know, your grandmother or your mother."
Yeah,
and so Alice and I are actually going to do an event at the Arts Club in October. And we're also, I don't know if your listeners can, you know, keep saving the date that far out, but on January 27th, she and I and, you know, many people, including, like, contemporary miniature makers and people like that, are going to do an event at the Museum of Science and Industry in celebration. So January 27th, it's a Saturday, 2024. Come out to the Fairy Castle. Alice and I will both be there.
Well, I'll alert people on the show, too. That just sounds so, so charming. And the reviews for the book have been, I think, just justifiably spectacular. Justifiably spectacular. Now, I don't...
Thank you.
I don't mean to, you know, put you on the spot, but having done this, are you out? Had I ever written a book this wonderful, I'd be out there looking for another kind of a wonderfully obscure person who had faded and been buried by history's dust to sort of take and give a new novel to. You must be very, very pleased with what you've done with this life.
Yes, I'm really happy with how the book turned out and how generously people are receiving it, including you. And I am at work on another one. I love writing. I don't think people should be prolific for the sake of, you know, being prolific, but there's nothing I love more. So I am already working on another historical book, and I have a one genre I haven't yet done, but I'm doing is a picture book that I co-wrote with my sister Beth Rooney. So shout out to her. She lives in Oak Park, and it's coming out in 2025. So
Books are on the horizon. You and Beth are already booked for the show. Kathleen, you are a remarkable writer and a terrific person and an unbelievable workaholic. You teach. You're on a publishing outfit. Go to Kathleen's website, KathleenRooney.com, and you'll see all that she does. And Poems While You Wait is a remarkable thing where she and some other poets will visit various places, sit down with typewriters, and write you a poem.
Yes.
You're the best, Kathleen. Thank you so, so much, and thanks so much for writing this book. I only wish my mother were still alive. She could read it. And say to herself,
"Thank you, Rick."
And say to herself, "Why aren't I in there? Colleen and I used to drink, and Adler and Colleen and I." It's a good thing she's not in there. Take good care. Sell more books.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay,
I'll talk
care.
To you soon.
Bye.
Bye.